This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Today, I am joined in the JPR studios by Mr. John McEwen. You probably know him from his many years with Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He's also got a tremendous solo career, and he's my guest live today in the studios. Hello, sir. Welcome.
Hey, like I said to my mom, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. John McEwen's latest solo project is a new record called Roots Music Made in Brooklyn. JohnMcEwen.com is the web address to learn all about his solo career and his years with the band and the new record. 50 years with Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah, it's been 50 years.
Congratulations on the milestone.
Well, thank you very much.
This was 1966. You were all of what, about 20 years old, and the other guys in the band weren't even 20, right?
No, I was the oldest. I still am. I'm starting to sound more like it every day. And but yeah, one guy was a junior in high school. One was a senior. Jeff was in his first year of college, and we're hanging around the music store in Long Beach. I was teaching there and hanging around there, and everybody was hanging around the coffee table. It was a very laid-back situation where you'd sit around and play music in the afternoon after school. Hmm.
I was reading a really interesting anecdote about the very, very early, not even years, but months of Nitty Gritty, because you were not there in month one.
Well,
you actually replaced Jackson Brown.
Jackson and I have an understanding that I didn't replace him. He left. And then when the band got together as a group to make a record deal, that's when I think the group started. Jackson never, we have had many laughs about the fact the other guys have said for now 50 years, Jackson was an early member. He did 5 shows. They never made any money.
Well, you've done a heck of a lot more than 5 shows.
Well, it's just one of those things. Jackson was there. He was hanging around like everybody. I remember the time, the last night he played, I believe it was at a club in Tustin, and here he was 17 years old, and he came in and played a song. Hey, John, listen to this song. And I listened. I said, where'd you get it? He goes, well, I just made it up. I said, well, where'd you get the words? I wrote them. And it was, you know, I've been out walking these days. You know, it was him. He just finished, and he went out that night and did it on stage.
How long did it take that core of you guys to go from friends hanging out at a music store making music together to realizing, oh, hey, look, we're in a band?
Well, you know, again, everybody was so young. By August, we were getting some jobs around the folk clubs. By September, I convinced my brother to manage us, and then we had to wait for like 3 months to get a record deal, you know, and we got a record deal, and the first single was out February 7th, and it seemed like it had taken forever. Hmm. And Bye From Me, The Rain got on the radio. I'll never forget that night when I first heard it at 1:02 a.m., driving down Sunset. Here's a new song by a new group, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. I almost drove off the road.
Off and on through the decades, the music world, the radio world, has alternated between knowing exactly what to do with you guys and your music and not having a clue what to do with you guys.
I'm not wanting to deal with a name. When one of our songs, American Dream, came out, it made it to the top 10. Linda Ronstadt, Jeff had called to have her sing harmony with him. I mean, we'd known her since the early, early days. And they just didn't want to say that was... Oh, yeah, you've just been listening to Led Zeppelin and a Beatles replay. That was Aretha Franklin right after that. And here's the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. It sounded like they were saying, I think, 1910 Fruit Gum Company or something. So they didn't say anything, and people thought it was Jimmy Buffett or Linda or America. Most people thought that was a group by a song by America. And but it made it to the top 10 of the pop chart. And we do it in the show. One of the things people will see in the Dirt Band show is music from every decade. And it's a very strange history this group's had. A radio hit right off, 2 years of nothing. Doing Paint Your Wagon, spending 4 months in Baker, Oregon, watching Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin trying to learn to sing. And then go back and break up. 6 months later, start again, make Uncle Charlie, the fifth album that had Mr. Bojangles on it, along with Shelley's Blues and the first Kenny Loggins song to ever be recorded. And then after that, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which is now in the Library of Congress in the Grammy Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
we couldn't predict that stuff, and we thank the fans for that. I don't like the word fans. I like followers.
Okay.
You know, fan is like fanatic. We have very friendly followers.
What prompted your decision after 20 years to to split, to go your own way?
It was 21 years. I'd been the beginning in there since the beginning. I was president of the corporation. And on one day, it was over for that. I said, something's got to change. I vote for me leaving. And in the space of one day, I didn't have a manager, a record company, an attorney, an accountant, or an agency, or a wife, because I had also moved out of the house of the six kids and my wife that day. And wouldn't you know it, in that total lost space of that era, it was 1988, the first thing that happened after I figured out, I gotta sleep somewhere tonight, and it was midnight and I was hungry, I go walk into the Safeway store in Idaho Springs, and as I walk in, I knew my man Bojangles and he danced for you on the PA. I almost passed out. I turned around and left. Because that was the reason this wasn't working in the personal life and all that stuff. And the band was recording stuff that I didn't like. I'd been, there was a song that I was supposed to be playing banjo on. They used somebody else. And that killed me. Hmm. It really, I go into the studio, oh, we already got the banjo part. Well, I wasn't here. You know, so there were things like that that would happen. Now, do I hate anybody for that? No. Do I agree? No. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I would have kept it from getting on the radio or what? You know, Jeff, I think we ought to use a different lead singer. I know a guy down the street. You know, that didn't work. But those things happen. Bands are a very difficult animal to figure out. And the reason I make a lot of solo stuff is I have a lot of music that I want to record. And I don't expect the guys to say, can I do the next 8 songs on the album that we're doing?
Right.
You know.
We'll talk about this solo project in a bit, because you've just released a wonderful new solo record, though.
Thank you.
As we'll talk, it's hardly a solo record. You've got everybody on this album. John McEwen is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. John's new record is called Roots Music Made in Brooklyn. You can find out information at johnmcewen.com. All right, John, you have brought in an incredibly beautiful guitar.
Tell me
a little bit about what this thing is and play something for us.
George Gruen in Nashville is a man I bought instruments from since 1972, probably. And I walked in his store last year and he goes, John, come upstairs. I want to show you something. I said, George, I don't have any money on me. I still want to show it to you. And he showed me this guitar that was made in South Africa. And it's wonderful, made out of wood. And very light and plugged in. It's the best acoustic guitar I've ever played for a PA system. And it's called the Sweet Smooth Talker. And I like open tunings.
That is John McEwen live in our studios today. beautiful tune. It's a beautiful sounding instrument.
I don't know what the tune was. I was just playing in detuning there.
Well, and
I'll call it the Jefferson Exchange.
That sounds pretty good. Let's talk a little bit about this new record.
Okay.
It came out, as we were talking on the drive over here, it came out on a record label that is primarily known for a wonderful series of jazz releases.
Yep.
But you have collected just about everyone who is anyone to make this record, and you recorded it live with one mic.
I've always wanted to get things on one take. I record live direct to a two-track. That's how the Circle Being Broken album was done. A bunch of people gathered around, no multi-track, and you had to do it right. Because if you know the song, you should be able to play it. and I wanted to explore what the next step would be in getting great sound. And I ran into this guy, Norm Chesky, who has this label. Yes, they make a lot of jazz records, but the other thing they're known for is sound quality. And Norm Chesky, I gave him the idea. I said, I've run into so many great pickers over the years, people that are great to work with, that I've always wanted to record with, and I have some songs that I think have been overlooked. And we talked, and finally, 2 years and 3 months later, we went in the studio and recorded for 2 days. And some people say, how could you do that in 2 days? And I say, well, it was actually 50 years in 2 days. And I added up the ages of everybody on the album. 900 years of experience.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, it's David Bromberg, Jay Unger, Martha Redbone, David Amram, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a pretty amazing cast. There are a couple of Warren
Zevon. John Carter Cash.
Right.
As he says, I come from a musical family. His mom and dad, John and June.
And there are a couple of Warren Zevon covers.
Yeah.
What got you interested in doing his tunes for this record?
Well, you know, when the Dirt Band did the Uncle Charlie album, I look at that as a benchmark of our own personal success. There was a Buddy Holly song. There was a couple of unknown writers, let's say unrecognized older writers. And like when we first did Jambalaya, nobody had heard of Hank Williams, you know. And I feel like Warren Zevon is the current overlooked writer. That sure, there's a lot of Zevon fans, you know them, but I think there's younger people and some people of our age that, I've heard that name before. And I just wanted to bring out a couple of his great songs.
You guys have done a cover of Excitable Boy.
Which is one of the most miserable songs that you could. I mean, the guy that's singing it, Matt Cardsonis, I had him sing I said, I want to set this up with you singing the first two verses, and Bromberg's going to do the rest. And Bromberg's wife, Nancy, is standing there, and she goes, Excitable Boy, I hate that song. And David says, well, John wants me to sing it. And she goes, your voice is perfect for it. Because it's about somebody getting killed, but Mac the Knife is 10 times worse. He kills a lot more people, for one thing. Or, you know, Knoxville Girl. I grabbed her by her golden curls and drug her round and round and threw her in the river. It flows from Polly Vaughn, with her apron wrapped around her, he took her for a swan and he shot his girlfriend that was pregnant, Polly Vaughn. You know, that's the bluegrass world.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to put Warren Zevon's song into the world of music that loves murder ballads.
Well, should we listen to it?
Excitable Boy.
That is John McEwen from the new record called Made in Brooklyn. Everybody on every track on this record, or did people kind of come and go throughout the recording day?
There was a couple that people laid out on. Steve Martin came in only for one song. I needed banjo frailing, and I was playing mandolin on the other Warren Zevon song. And he's the reason it's named what it is, because we were in a church in Brooklyn, one that's been kind of out of business for a while, but it's a great room. And he looked up at me and said, John, what are you calling this? I said, I don't know yet. We haven't thought of a title. He says, well, you ought to call it Made in Brooklyn.
Now, is it true you actually started out doing magic?
Magic tricks. Steve and I were trying to get a job in the Disneyland Magic Shop when we were 16, actually. And we did. We worked there for 3 years. And it was such, the one way I can explain how it was the best years of our lives.
So you're a teenager. You're doing magic. You're trying to get the job. What pulls you into music?
Working in the magic shop.
Pulled you into music?
Next door, there's a jukebox at the Wurlitzer place. And the month that I started playing guitar, 17 years old. The songs on the jukebox were like Leaving on a Jet Plane. I didn't know it was written by John Duchendorf, who I'd meet later and who would become John Denver, who would become a friend. Also on there was a song, Sitting in a Railroad Station, Got a Ticket for My Destination, Suitcase and Guitar in Hand, going to a one. That's me. That's going to be me. I got to get better on the guitar. I didn't think I ever would get good enough on the guitar. So as I'm thinking that, I go see a group called the Dillards I'd never heard of. And Doug Dillard just took me away with that banjo. And at 18, I got my first banjo and dug in.
The record that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Yes.
1971, too. You recorded it probably in 71, came out in 72. And it was a look back, even for what you guys, I mean, you guys had had a pretty nice career already by that point, had done pretty well with some records, but this one was different. This was a look back at some of the pioneers of this acoustic roots music. And this was your idea, right, this record?
I don't say that it's my idea. I say I initiated it, and that's totally... In 1965, my brother and I went to Nashville to see the Grand Ole Opry. We couldn't get in. It was sold out. I looked in the north windows. It was August. The windows were open. Right when I looked in, Lester Flatt said, Earl and I are going to bring out Mama Maybelle Carter to do the Wildwood Flower. I almost passed out. I'd had the Carter Family tribute album by Flatt and Scruggs and all the Flatt and Scruggs albums. And oh my God, there they are. And I couldn't believe it. And I just said to myself, someday I'm going to record with some of those people. And my life has been so strange, Eric, that a mere 42 years later, minor chord, I'm standing on that same stage next to Earl Scruggs' casket.
Wow.
Playing at his memorial.
Wow.
He'd become a friend. Now, after that, a year later, the Dirt Band started. In 1970, he came to see the Dirt Band at Vanderbilt in Nashville. I didn't know why. What a weird thing for him to come see us. But he really liked that Uncle Charlie album. His sons had played it for him. Mm. He became friends, and 6 months later, he was in Colorado, and I asked him if he'd record with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And he said, I'd be proud to. And I couldn't go to sleep that night. I was going to get to record Soldier's Joy with Earl Scruggs, something I'd wanted to do ever since I started frailing the banjo instead of three finger. A week later, Doc Watson was at the same club. And I was a little bolder. I went, Doc, hi, I'm John with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and we're making an album with Earl Scruggs, which we weren't doing yet. He just said, I'd be proud to. And he said he'd want to come. My brother got Merle Travis. We wanted to get Jimmy Martin. And then, Earl, can you see if Maybelle would come? That fell in place, and we got Acuff, and Earl said, I found a fiddler named Basher Clemens. And I said, is he good enough for the whole album? And Earl said, he'll do. Because see, Basher's name wasn't on the album. I'd been listening to Basher's music for years with Jim and Jesse and all these different people he played with. And now I got to meet him. Nicest guy you could work with. And he and Fadden just took off. Harmonica, fiddle. It was great. Mm. Go ahead.
You guys followed that record with another volume in the late 80s and another volume in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. There now seems to be yet another renaissance of acoustic American string music.
Well, that's
with a new generation.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to make the version of an album that I wanted with people with no showbiz restrictions.
Well, you have brought in not only this incredibly beautiful guitar, but also a banjo, and we should thank Hilltop Music Shop for providing a banjo.
Yeah.
Will you play us something on that today?
Well, yeah. I like open tunings. The guitar was in a D tuning. This is a C tuning. And if you change one string, it's a C minor tuning. We'll get to that later, but you can do C minor is one of my favorites. Thank you. I can see where the banjo takes me. Yeah. Like, here's a good chord. I was talking about Soldier's Joy earlier. That's in C major. This is what I wanted to hear Earl pick.
That is John McEwen live today on Jefferson Public Radio. His new record is called Roots Music Made in Brooklyn. I could listen to you do that all day.
You know, that's a problem, because I can too.
is that the instrument you gravitate to when you just have some free time and you want to just create some new music?
I like the banjo because of the different tunings and the moods it can create. Like I was saying earlier, that's major, and just dropping one string creates a whole different world.
You have said that it is getting easier to make recordings that sound great.
Yeah, I think because the players have all learned so much about where they want the mic on their instrument or how to play it, when to lay out. There's a lot of restraint on the Brooklyn album. And Chesky told us, here's the way this works. If you can't hear the other guy playing, you're playing too loud. Mm. You have to listen to each other. And if somebody's taking a solo, back them up.
Do you think there might be one more Will the Circle Be Unbroken volume?
I don't know about that. It's.
I mean, there's so many great young players now coming up that it would be interesting to collect some of them for the next volume.
I think so, too. But one of the difficulties with the nitty-gritty dirt band is I don't get support for anything I do within the structure of the group. Mm. Another reason I make solo albums. Now, that can be looked at from one viewpoint or another, of course. Maybe the viewpoint of it's hard to say if you're in a band, I want to record 8 of my songs right on the next 10-song album.
Do you still get energized by hearing young, new, hot players?
Very much so, yeah. Chris Thiele, I couldn't believe it when I first met him. His father came up to me at a festival and said, can my son sit in with you? I said, how old is he? He's 14. What's he play? Mandolin. I will bring him over here. I played about 8 bars of a song with him. And I said, I'll call him up in the middle of the set. And he was just a fireball.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories and your music with us today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to meet you.